And welcome into the Doug Russell Podcast. Hope you had a happy and healthy New Year's celebration, whether it was at home or on Zoom, or maybe you went out to a restaurant. My wife and I went out to Mr. B's in Brookfield. This is not an ad. They're not paying for this. They just took care of everyone there, and their protocols were in place and made everyone feel safe about that. So we were grateful to them and the folks at Bartolotta's for that. But again, hope everybody had a safe and happy and healthy New Year celebration. Hopefully everyone had a nice Christmas or Hanukkah or Kwanzaa or whatever it is you celebrate. Because if you're listening to this, we made it. Happy 2021. Hopefully we'll never have another 2020 ever again. The big news, of course, at least as far as the business of today's show, is Sunday's Packers-Bears game. Green Bay wins or gets a Seattle loss. The Packers are the top seed in the NFC. Seattle, they take on San Francisco. And the Seahawks, after their midseason swoon, they're back to playing like we expect the Seahawks to play. The Packers will be without one of their best players in All-Pro David Bakhtiari, out for the rest of the season because of a torn ACL. Bakhtiari, no surprise, he was the main event talking point of Coach Matt LaFleur's Friday news conference.
Yeah, unfortunately, Dave will be out the rest of the season. You know, it's just one of those unfortunate freak things that happens sometimes in practice. It was certainly nobody's fault. It was a freaky deal. And, you know, it's tough to replace a guy of his caliber. I mean, you're talking about a premier left tackle in this league, but you know, you feel so bad for Dave, just all the work and everything he pours into this job, and he does such a great job, such a great team leader, and so you always feel bad for him. But like I told our players, you know, there's going to be nobody that's feeling sorry for us as a football team, and our standards, our expectations, they don't change. And so we're very fortunate to have a lot of depth at that position, and the versatility of guys that can play multiple spots. So we'll lean on that. We'll rally around each other, and, you know, we're going to make the best of it.
Olivia Reiner.
Hi, Matt. You've discussed throughout the season dealing with adversity here and there. However, probably nothing amounts to this. What was the message to the players, to the coaches today coming in and kind of just looking forward without Dave?
Yeah, you can't let it affect your attitude, the way you prepare, the effort that you give, the focus that you bring every day. You know, we've got a job to do, and that is to go on Sunday and play a team that is fighting for everything that they have in front of them as well. So, like I just said, the standards, the expectations, they don't change, and that's going to take everybody to do their part, do their 1/11th on every play to the best of their ability, and that's all you can ask for.
Bill Huber.
Hey, Matt. I know you got confidence in your guys. Can you largely go about business as usual as far as the way you run your offense, or is it going to take some sizable adapting? I'd hate to get too game plan specific. I'm not trying to. But.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I think there's some things that you may have to adjust, but for the most part, we've got a lot of confidence in the other guys in that room. And like you mentioned earlier, played three games without him, really three and a half games without him earlier this year. So that's just part of life in the National Football League. You always constantly have to adjust and adapt. And, you know, we're fortunate that we've got a lot of great players, really in all three phases that, you know, you just got to lean on and they got to rally around each other.
Steve McGargy.
I guess this increases the importance of Rick Wagner for this weekend. What's his availability for Sunday? I know he practiced part of the week, but not all of it.
Yeah, no, we'll give him through the week. We think he's going to be good to go, though. And, you know, we've got a lot of confidence. Rick's done an outstanding job all season long. And, you know, fortunate to have a guy that's capable to come in there and play good football for us.
Tom Silverstein.
Hey, Matt. I'm sorry if maybe you addressed it, but I know, I think I asked you last week whether you're going to have a padded practice, and this is your last week of not having padded practice, right? Is that correct?
That is correct, yeah.
So was that like the worst case scenario that just drops your heart that you lose a guy in a non-contact practice?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, it was just one of those freak things, you know, that sometimes happens, and you know, it's a part of the game. And but you just feel so bad for any of our players that have to go through all the rehab and everything they put up to get to this point, especially when you're talking about a guy that David does so much and takes great care of his body, prepares the right way. And that's why he's become the player that he's become, is because he does everything the right way. And so your heart just hurts for him, and just knowing that he's going to have a long road ahead of him. But I know how he'll attack it. He'll attack it the same way, and he'll bounce back from this, and he'll be back. And I bet you he'll probably come back faster than most.
Packers coach Matt LaFleur. So what does this all mean to the Bears, this game coming up on Sunday? Joining me now here on the Doug Russell Podcast from ESPN 1000 in Chicago. He covers the Bears every single day. We welcome in Adam Abdallah to the Doug Russell Podcast. Adam, I appreciate the time. Happy New Year. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Is this going to be a happy new year for Mitchell Trubisky, Matt Nagy, Ryan Pace, and the Chicago Bears? That's been one of the big stories this week in the NFL, because you've got these two arch rivals, and there's so much once again on the line between the Packers and the Bears.
Yeah, I mean, if we go back a month ago, the Packers beat the Bears 41-25, and since then, you know, the Bears have been on, you know, they lost to Detroit 34-30 in a close game, but then they beat Houston, they beat Minnesota, and most recently they beat Jacksonville. And the common theme between those four teams is bad defenses. Detroit has the 32nd worst defense as far as points per game allowed. Houston has the 26th defense, Minnesota 28th, and Jacksonville comes in at 31st. So yeah, the Bears defense or Bears offense has been playing great. Mitchell Trubisky has been playing a lot better. David Montgomery has been playing a lot better, and I think that kind of sets up Mitchell Trubisky's success. But this is all kind of like weird waters for the Bears and Bears fans, because you don't want to get too high on this team, because you look at the competition that you faced and you say, well, yeah, you only face the competition in front of you and you only play the games that's on your schedule, but it'd be foolish to say that this team is set for some great Super Bowl run, because they haven't really played a good team since they lost to the Packers about a month ago.
You take a look at this season, and it's been a tale of, I guess, 3 years. They got up to a 5-1 start, then they lost six in a row, and then the run that you were just talking about a moment ago, Adam. Where did this team, you know, start to ebb and flow, and how do they get it back? Is it just the competition, or is there something beyond, you know, the quarterback change from Trubisky to Foles and then back to Trubisky? Because this has been a really weird year if you're following the Bears.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of a lot of things. Matt Nagy turned over play calling to Bill Lazor. It's obviously still Matt Nagy's offense. It's still his game plan. It's still his plays. They're just being called by Bill Lazor, the offensive coordinator. And maybe that means plays are being called in a different sequence. You know, if you looked at the Bears during their losing streak, it didn't feel like there was any flow to the offense. It just felt like some kid was playing Madden for the first time and he was just picking plays at random, and there was nothing being set up. There were no adjustments at halftime. They weren't coming out of the third quarter. You know, going into this winning streak when they were losing, they had only scored 7 points in the third quarter for the first 10 or so games of the year. So when you look at it, it's kind of a testament to Bill Lazor to putting together a better game plan while still using Matt Nagy's plays, but also they're finally running the ball. They had 470 rushing yards in weeks 1 through 11. Weeks 12 through 16, 529. They have more rushing yards in those few weeks than they had the entire season leading up to that. They're averaging 5.6 yards per carry. They have 6 rushing touchdowns. They attempt more yards per game. They have 106 rushing yards per game. So I think the game plan has been tailored differently. They look at Mitchell Trubisky coming in after he leaves for Nick Foles, is benched, and then comes back in for a quote injured and then benched Nick Foles. And he comes in and they've really changed the game plan as far as what they're going to do. They're more run heavy. They run first. They run more so on first and second down with Trubisky a quarterback than they ever did with Nick Foles during his short time starting. They roll out Trubisky a lot. They put him in play action a lot. He's on the move, throwing on the move a lot more. If you still watch the games and watch Trubisky in the pocket, he's still struggling. He still has happy feet. He's still not going through his progression, overthrowing, underthrowing receivers. But when they roll him out and he has more time and he can, you know, you cut the field in half, in essence, he's a lot better. And a lot of fans are saying, well, where was this the entire year? Well, the entire year you were playing harder teams. You were playing better teams. You were playing teams with better competition. And now you're playing the bottom of the barrel when it comes to these defenses. So fans are kind of like, you know, well, what are we seeing here? Is this, have we finally seen something in Trubisky? And this could now lead to another year of Ryan Pace, another year of Matt Nagy, maybe, you know, giving Trubisky a new contract. They didn't pick up his fifth year option. So they're going to have to go after him and maybe give him a 2 or 3 year deal with some team options should they want to keep him. I think it probably shouldn't come down to this, but I think a lot is riding on this last game against the Packers to see if there is real change, because the Packers defense is 16th in the league when it comes to points per game allowed. They're a legitimate defense. They've kind of put things together throughout the year. You know, obviously they have Aaron Rodgers and that high potent offense, the number one offense in the NFL. So right now this is kind of like, all right, we've seen this, we've seen them against bad teams. They kind of have their confidence going. They're on this 3-game win streak. Can they finally put it together against a good team? That good team happens to be the rivals in the Green Bay Packers. Oh, and it happens to be a team, you know, a game that if you win, you automatically get into the playoffs.
I hear what you're saying about a lot riding on this game, as we're joined by ESPN 1000's Adam Abdallah. He covers the Chicago Bears in the Windy City. But what does it say about Matt Nagy, who, if I'm not mistaken, was in part brought into Chicago 3 years ago to be like this wunderkind type of play caller when he came over from the Kansas City Chiefs? 2 years ago, he was the NFL's coach of the year. Now he's giving up play calling and the team is flourishing. What does that say about Nagy and how he's viewed in Chicago?
I think it says a lot about his willingness to admit when he's overwhelmed. I think that, I don't think he would say this in public, but I think when he's, you know, trying to coach in game, I think he's overwhelmed by having to coach the game and call plays. He's a good leader, right? He's always been, everyone's always said this guy's a great leader. The team never gave up on him, even during this losing streak. The team has never given up on him. And that says a lot because, you know, when Mark Trestman was here, the team gave up on him. The team never really gave up on John Fox, even though they were really bad. But John Fox is this respected coach who comes in with a great pedigree in the NFL. You know, it could have easily gone the route of Mark Trestman with Matt Nagy, this guy who's never had a chance to coach a team before. It's his first head coaching gig. He comes in, his offensive gimmicks and whatnot aren't really working. You know, there, he's got this great defense that he's losing with. And so it could have easily gone the route of the offense giving up, the defense, this great defense, giving up on him, and then just checking out and saying, you know what, you're probably not going to be here next year. We all have contracts for next year, so we're still going to be here. So why should we go out and, you know, try when we know you're not going to be around? But they never quit on him. I think it says a lot for his ability to delegate. It's still his offense. I think when he came to Chicago, he wanted to run Kansas City's offense as it was. He came in and he's like, look, I've got this offense. I want to run it. It's going to be great. The problem is, I don't think he realized that he didn't have Patrick Mahomes and he didn't have one of the you know, the few great weapons in the NFL and all these weapons at his disposal on offense. He doesn't have that here in Chicago. He doesn't have the great offensive line. He doesn't have the Hall of Fame quarterback. He doesn't have the, you know, Tariq Cohen got injured this year, so he had to adjust for that. So I think his willingness to adjust, his willingness to make changes has changed a lot this year. And it was shown by his ability to give up plays and say, you know what, I need to focus on coaching the team during the games and maybe taking an outside approach and looking at the game from 10,000 feet above and letting other people call my plays. It's still his offense. It's still my offense if he was talking. But it's someone else looking at it during the game and calling my plays in a different sequence. And I think that says a lot about him and his progression as a coach. I think, you know, it's going to be hard to let Matt Nagy go if this team makes the playoffs. And I think he's taken a lot of steps moving forward that says he can adjust. Now, will those adjustments matter against a good team? We'll find out on Sunday.
I don't think that Mitchell Trubisky is ever going to live down Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson. And I mean that by, you know, Mitchell Trubisky, the number two overall pick in the draft, the same year that Mahomes and Watson were picked. You know, Watson hasn't had the team success, obviously, or the individual success for that matter, that certainly Mahomes has had. But as far as Trubisky, you know, you see some of the jokes coming out of, you know, Packer fandom saying that they hope that, you know, look, if there's any silver lining that could come from a Packers loss on Sunday, maybe it would be that the Bears sign Mitchell Trubisky to a long-term contract, and then, you know, you won't, you know, be rid of him, and you'll still get to play him twice a year, and it might be worth, you know, taking one for the team, which I think is a little bit of a defeatist attitude. But as far as where Trubisky is right now, how do Bears fans feel about him? And is he, in your opinion, as someone who's covered his entire career in Chicago, is he the guy that can lead this team's offense on the field?
Well, I think it's a factor of a few things going into next season. I think that you have to look at the Bears cap space and how they have little to none of it. You know, Ryan Pace has tied up a lot of money into this defense and paying guys, you know, like Khalil Mack, like Robert Quinn, you know, paying Nick Foles to come over when they re-signed him, you know, when they gave him the extension or redid his deal. You know, they've given a lot of players, Eddie Jackson is the highest paid, you know, at his position. So they've given a lot of players a lot of money, and that has kind of hampered them when it comes to going after a quarterback next season. They also haven't done themselves any favors should they not make the playoffs this weekend in terms of where they're going to draft. You know, they're obviously not in the top, you know, four or five picks to get a Trevor Lawrence or a Justin Fields. You know, I don't think they're going to have a high enough draft pick to even maybe get Trey Lance or Zach Wilson or maybe even Mac Jones. So when you look at where they can draft and who they can draft, they're probably not going to draft a day one starter given their position. So if you're going to keep the philosophy from fans and some fans, that, you know, there's really two factions. There's the fans that are done and say, look, I've seen enough Trubisky. I've seen this movie before. I know how it ends. I've seen all the sequels to this movie. It ends the same every single time with Trubisky not being able to perform. You know, he's had his best QBR was against the Jags, but also if you watch each play, he was still missing receivers in the pocket. Like I mentioned, he still struggles. So when the game plan is to get him on the move, he's successful against bad teams. And that's not a recipe for success. There's also the faction of fans that will say, look, this guy's performing. It's finally time. Maybe after a few years, they always point to Drew Brees. They'll say, look how long it took Drew Brees to get it. Look how long it took Drew Brees to finally figure it out and come to and actually put together the Hall of Fame career that he has. And I don't know if fans have that much patience with Trubisky. I think, like I said before, if they make the playoffs, it's going to be hard to get rid of Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace. I think that also means it's going to be hard to get rid of Mitchell Trubisky, especially if they beat the Packers, just because of who they have to go out and get as far as free agency, because we know Nick Foles is going to be back. It costs too much to cut him. He's going to be there. So whether he's the backup or whether he's the starter, Nick Foles is going to be on the Bears next season. So it's a matter of, do we draft a quarterback, you know, late in the first round, late in the second round, and try to groom him and learn under Nick Foles, and then he's there for a year? Or do you just sign Trubisky to a 1 or 2 year deal, you know, with a team option for that second year and hope that he proves it? Because I don't think Trubisky is going to get a starting job anywhere else in the NFL, because NFL execs, no, they watch the games. They know who Trubisky is. I think the Bears know who Trubisky is. He might be the right guy for this right time, even if it is for another year, just to see if what we've seen over the past 3 or 4 games can translate into the next season. I'm of the belief that I've seen enough Trubisky. I don't need to see any more. I'd rather see a new movie than the movie I've seen for the last 4 years. So that, I think it comes down to this game, but I think it's kind of hard that if they keep the coaching staff intact to get rid of Trubisky at the same time.
you talk to Bears fans every day. What's their attitude heading into this game? Is it confidence? Is it trepidation? How do they feel about facing their arch rivals with so much on the line, both short and long term?
I don't think I've ever seen a fan base more split, to be honest with you. I think that you've got fans that want to see them win and say, look, if you get a spot in the playoffs, it's good because you never know what can happen in the playoffs. But then, you know, a few games ago, you had the faction of fans that going into the Detroit game or after the Detroit game when they lost, that said, well, at this point, just keep losing. Why win? Because you're just ruining your draft position. After the loss to the Packers on the 29th, and then when they lost to Detroit on early in December, after beating Houston, it was like, okay, well, you're probably going to beat Houston anyway. And then winning against Minnesota, it was like, okay, well, now they have a chance to make the playoffs. So I think you've got a split fan base where some fans want to see them win because they still believe in Trubisky and they still believe that this is all Matt Nagy being stubborn and never tailoring his offense to the quarterback that he had and trying to force him into turning into Patrick Mahomes. And then you've got the other side that says, well, we're just going to lose in the first round of the playoffs anyway, so what's the point? Get the better draft pick. So you have an honestly, it's a horrible way to answer the question, and I apologize, but it's a split fan base where I think that if you walk down the street and ask 20 people, you'll get 10 people that want them to lose and 10 people that want them to win.
Adam Abdallah from ESPN 1000 in Chicago. You can follow him on Twitter at Adam A. Abdallah. And by the way, as I scrolled through your Twitter page, is that former Bear and current ESPN 1000 host Tom Waddle? Is he the shirtless one who's pouring water all over himself in the studio? Because you're right, that is the gif of the year.
Yes, yeah. So that came, I believe, that came in the middle of the losing streak. And it was probably maybe the Tennessee game, maybe the Minnesota game, where Waddle just said, you know what, screw it. We need to change the attitude here. Pulled his shirt off and dumped water all over himself for our people on our Twitch chat, where you can always watch our shows. And someone captured it and we made it into a GIF. But yeah, it kind of sums up the fan base. Some people will take that sad shower after the game, and some people will be pouring whatever's left over their champagne all over their bodies for making the playoffs this year.
That's outstanding. That's restaurant quality stuff.
He is our radio monkey. When we ask him to dance and we pull the string, he does it.
Every station needs one, my friend. Every station needs a monkey.
Exactly.
Adam Abdallah from ESPN 1000 in Chicago. You can follow him again on Twitter at Adam A. Abdallah. Adam, I appreciate the time. Happy New Year to you. And hopefully we'll get a chance to talk again soon.
Thanks for having me. Happy New Year.
Moving on to college football.
Second and 8, Fields. Back of the Clemson 29, looking to pass. Tosses right side, hits his tight end, who's going to waltz into the end zone. Jeremy Ruckert for a touchdown for Ohio State to give the Buckeyes a lead. Justin Fields in the shotgun. Two tight ends on the left side of the line, two wide outs to the right, one of them motioning. Wilson, snap to Fields, and for the Clemson 20, fires into the end zone. Oh! Caught, touchdown! Jeremy Ruckert catches it again from Justin Fields. Jeremy Ruckert. Justin Fields out of the shotgun. He's going to fling it. Fields from his 36 cranks and fires deep. Down the left side, inside the 10. Olave got it for a score. Chris Olave runs under a deep ball and hauls in a touchdown pass from Justin Fields. A 56-yard scoring strike. And Ohio State's lead is increased by 6 more points to 41-21 over Clemson.
Paul Keels on Learfield, IMG, and the Buckeyes Radio Network. Nobody saw this one coming. Ohio State not only beat Clemson, they dominated Clemson. The final score in the Sugar Bowl, 49-28. Justin Fields with 6 touchdown passes. He was 22 of 28 and also suffered a terrible rib injury during the game. Now, I don't know that I know the letter of the law says that it was spearing, but again, I mean, I think it's been said over and over, at least on social media, the ones that I've seen. They've really got to do something about the targeting penalties in college football, because it doesn't take into account the toughness of football. It doesn't take into account the intent of trying to make a hard tackle. And I thought that, again, I understand the letter of the law. I just think it's a stupid rule, and the way that it's enforced is nonsensical on so many levels. But this Ohio State game against Clemson, this is why the Big Ten changed their own rules. And I said it on the podcast, and I've been fighting with Indiana fans. Why am I fighting with Indiana fans, by the way, on Twitter? Indiana fan right now is probably the bitterest, saltiest fan base because they feel like either they were jobbed out of the Big Ten championship game or they were jobbed out of the Citrus Bowl, which I don't get on either level. Number one, they weren't jobbed out of the Big Ten championship game. They lost to Ohio State. Ohio State was the only team in the Big Ten that was going to get any consideration for the college football playoff. And what does the college football playoff mean? It means a $6 million payout. But it doesn't go to Ohio State. That $6 million payout goes to the Big Ten Conference, who then disperse it equally among all 14 schools. And I don't think Indiana understands that, or at least the fans that I was battling with during the Sugar Bowl, I don't think they understood that. That, and I made a comment on social media that I was disappointed that Indiana, I think I used the phrasing, grow up, but I was disappointed that Indiana decided that they were going to stick out their middle finger and tell the Big Ten to go F themselves by covering up the Big Ten logo, because apparently they were disappointed that they went to the Outback Bowl instead of the Citrus Bowl. I understand the pecking order in Big Ten bowl games. I don't need it explained to me, but for all intents and purposes, and for 99.9% of the fan base that covers and listens to and digests and watches and consumes college football, there is not a tinker's damn worth of a difference between the Outback Bowl and the Citrus Bowl. It's Orlando versus Tampa. They're both generally New Year's bowl games. Neither one of them is a New Year's Six. They're second-tier bowl games. There are a couple of different tiers of bowl games. I think there's like three in my mind. You've got the New Year's Six, and that's obviously the Rose Bowl, Fiesta Bowl, Sugar Bowl, Peach Bowl, Cotton Bowl, Rose Bowl, the New Year's Six. Then you've got that second tier, and the Citrus Bowl is in that second tier. The Holiday Bowl is in that second tier. The Outback Bowl is definitely in that second tier. The Music City Bowl is in that second tier. And then there's the tier that's below that. And quite frankly, that's where I'd put the Duke's Mayo Bowl. And a lot of people on Twitter were kind of coming back at me and saying, well, your team went to the Mayonnaise Bowl. Look, that's what they deserved. That's what they earned. The Wisconsin Badgers, the way that they played this season, they did not earn anything better than the Mayonnaise Bowl. So they went to the Mayonnaise Bowl. I'm happy they won the Mayonnaise Bowl. I'm happy they went to the Mayonnaise Bowl. But I'm not upset that they got hosed out of the Outback Bowl or the Citrus Bowl because they didn't earn it. They didn't deserve it. They got what they earned. So Ohio State goes to the college football playoff. Indiana's pissed off about that because, well, they broke their own rules and they wouldn't break the rules for Indiana. Listen, Indiana fan, you had a great season. Revel in it. Enjoy it. Look back on it. Build from it. I have no quarrel with Indiana as a football program. I've made jokes about Indiana still having a football program over the last several years. I don't take back any of those jokes because that's what they've earned. Some guy came at me and said, well, they wouldn't do that to Florida. And look, this is how college football works, whether you think it should or not. What you have done in the past matters. You can view this season for Indiana football as a one-off if you choose. Now, if they sustain it over the course of the next 3, 4, 5, 6, 10, 12, 15, 20 years, you can say this was the start of something great. But look, you take a look at the Wisconsin football program when Barry Alvarez first took over. They were irrelevant for 40 years almost, with the exception of a couple of Rose Bowls here and there in the 1960s. They were an also-ran. Nobody thought of them as a great football program, and that's where Indiana is. So when the guy came to me and said, well, they wouldn't do this to Florida, how did Florida get a New Year's Six bowl game and Indiana didn't? The simple answer is this. If you look back at the last 30 years, in those last 30 seasons, Florida's had 28 winning seasons and 3 national championships. In that same time frame, Indiana's had, what, 4 winning seasons? You got to build it up a little bit. So just relax. Everything will be okay, Indiana fan. But this is why Ohio State was pushed forward into the national championship picture. That's why the Big Ten broke their own rules. They should have broke their own rules. They needed to break their own rules. Because when you make your own rules and you administer your own rules, a rule of life is that you can change your own rules. And that's what the Big Ten did. Because Indiana had one loss, because Northwestern had a loss, they weren't going to be considered for the college football playoff. I still don't think that Notre Dame, we'll get to Notre Dame in a second. Notre Dame had two losses, well, one loss this season, now they have two. But Notre Dame had one loss, and I didn't think that they deserved to go to the college football playoff. I thought Texas A&M did. So Ohio State, now at 7-0, they clobber Clemson, and there's some schadenfreude, certainly, for Dabo Swinney putting Ohio State at number 11. Was it motivating? Yeah, maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. I don't know. I don't know that any player, when they're playing for a championship, needs bulletin board material. I think the rest of the country is kind of happy that it's not Clemson going to the national championship game again. Of course, on the other side of the bracket, you had what transpired in the Rose Bowl. That was the game that actually turned out to be a little bit closer than we thought it was going to be. Notre Dame covered. Alabama takes it 31-14, so a week from Monday night in Miami, you will see top seed Alabama take on number 3 seed Ohio State for the national championship. Should be, hope it's a good game. I hope it's, you know, competitive. I think Alabama is still the best team in the country, but man, Ohio State looked damn good, and I hate saying that. I am not an Ohio State fan. I married into an Ohio State fan. I'm surrounded by Ohio State slappies, but I am not an Ohio State fan. Should be a good game, though, and I am looking forward to it. All right, how about this? After initially saying that Tom Herman, just 3 weeks ago, was going to remain the head coach of the Texas Longhorns, they fired him on Saturday after 4 years with the team. Now, there's a couple of differing stories as to who the next coach will be. The first story is that Texas is set to hire Alabama offensive coordinator Steve Sarkisian as Herman's replacement. And then my friend Tim Brando, who is someone who has his finger on the pulse of college football probably more than any one person I know, says that now Steve Sarkisian is having second thoughts, and maybe Nick Saban has something to do with that. Steve Sarkisian right now, the offensive coordinator of the Alabama Crimson Tide. Texas can back up the truck of money to Steve Sarkisian's house, but then again, so can Alabama. Steve Sarkisian is one of those guys who I think is a very good offensive coordinator. I think he's a very good position coach, but I don't think he's very good at the head of the room. This is someone who, when he was in the Pac-12, was an okay head coach at Washington and a complete disaster at USC. And part of what his problem was at USC is that he had a drinking problem. Now, I hope that he's got his drinking problem under control now, but he was showing up to booster functions just completely annihilated. He was embarrassing the program. He was told by then athletic director Pat Hayden that, look, this is the last straw. You need to get some help. We will support you in getting some help, but you've got to, you know, agree to us that the nonsense stops now. The drinking will stop. The public intoxication that embarrasses the program will stop. I hope it has. Whether he's the new head coach of the Texas Longhorns or he stays the offensive coordinator at the University of Alabama. What I do know is that he's had so much more success. First, it was with USC in the mid-2000s under Pete Carroll. And then now, most recently, as the offensive coordinator for the Alabama Crimson Tide. He was also the offensive coordinator in the NFL for the Atlanta Falcons. Had some success there as well. Just not good at the front of the room. Then there are guys that are like that. Ray Rhodes was like that. Ray Rhodes was a terrible head coach, but a very, very good defensive coordinator back in his day. Dave Campo, great defensive coordinator, terrible head coach. Norv Turner, very good offensive coordinators, had a ton of success as an offensive coordinator. Terrible head coach. There are guys that are just like that. It's not a criticism. It's just some guys are better suited for that CEO role than others. And I don't think that Steve Sarkisian is necessarily one of those guys who's a good CEO. So buyer beware if you're the Texas Longhorns. If that's the direction that they are continuing to go in, by the time many of you hear this, we will know whether or not it is actually Steve Sarkisian, or if he did indeed have second thoughts and is going to remain at the University of Alabama. All right, that's about it for this edition of the Doug Russell Podcast. If you were able to listen to any of my shows on SportsMap Radio over the last several weeks as well, thank you for tuning in to those. Also, all over the place over at iHeart. I'll continue to be over there as well at 97.3 The Game. May pop up on some of the other iHeart stations in Milwaukee and in Madison as well, so stay tuned for that. But we're going to continue on doing the Doug Russell Podcast here wherever you get your podcasts. The growth of this since we started the project back in September has been incredible. It's been gratifying. I love hearing from you guys, whether it's via email, and you can always drop us an email, DougRussellPod@gmail.com. You can also interact with us on Twitter and on Instagram. Usernames for both of those platforms is at Doug Russell Pod. You can find all of our back episodes online at DougRussellPod.com. Again, that's DougRussellPod.com. We all made it. We got to 2021. Thank God we made it to 2021. We're looking for bigger and better things in the new year. Again, hope everybody had a Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa, Happy New Year, Happy everything from all of us here at the Doug Russell Podcast. Have a great weekend.